Next is an excerpt from a talk given on November 28, 1999, in Dublin, Ireland.
Krishna says, "Never was there a time when I did not exist, or you, or all these kings, and never in the future shall we cease to exist." And just as in boyhood the soul exists, and in youth and old age, so at the time of death he takes another body. A sober person is not bewildered at such a change. So with great clarity Krishna teaches this very, very early after becoming the spiritual master of Arjuna. And this forms the foundation for our lives in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada used to call it the ABC, spiritual knowledge. And in our own, each of us probably remember, we can tell some incident or story how we came to accept it, either by reading the Bhagavad Gita or by talking with a devotee and thinking about it. We might think, however, that once you accept it, then it just grows stronger and stronger and stays throughout the life. But that's often not a fact. Sometimes we retreat or doubts come. We don't develop strong conviction and nishtha. So Prabhupada used to regularly provoke a discussion about this with his disciples, sometimes on morning walks, and other times. I remember being present, and on a number of occasions I would play the role of the foil to this teaching. So I can remember how it would go. Especially I remember transmigration of the soul. Prabhupada would say, "So this is a perfectly clear instruction. Well, how can there possibly be any objection to it? From boyhood to youth to old age, the self is present, so he will be present in the next life. What is the objection?" So I would say that this example doesn't prove it doesn't prove that there's a that it happens in the next life. It describes the change in this life and suggests that the thing could happen in the next life, but it doesn't. Oh, Prabhupada would say that it does prove by analogy. And I would say, but it's an analogy, I would say. I remember going over this one walk, particularly coming from the Schloss or castle in Germany, 1974. I said, "It's an analogy, but I have no experience of it actually happening." So then Prabhupada switched the argument from the analogy of 2:14. He said, "Yes, what do you mean you don't have experience? Every night you have an experience when you dream." He said, "You have an experience that you have one self, and then when you in the dream you have a particular self, and you forget your one self, and then when you wake you have another self. So that's your experience." And I said, "But that's not the experience that after death I'll have another body." And then if necessary, Prabhupada would put that argument aside almost any argument Prabhupada used, he used them like almost like weapons, ready to use another one if necessary. I'm not saying that I defeated Prabhupada, but he was in any of these arguments, but he was ready to use one after another, not just thinking that he was depending only on one. He was very dexterous to slippery Mayavadis and atheists. So then he said that anyway, Krishna says this, and Krishna is the greatest authority, so we accept it on Krishna's authority. And then either me or somebody else might speak up, understanding that Prabhupada was enjoying that lion-like play with the cubs, might speak up and say, but we don't accept Krishna. Then I kick on your face. you rascal, who are you who should I accept, Krishna or you? And so then we would always be ready to think of something else, but we and then Prabhupada might get quite angry in the talk, although he had provoked it, and he would say, what other argument? Is there another argument? And we would keep giving arguments, because you can always give some argument and say, well, I don't accept Krishna. But when Prabhupada started insulting you, then you started thinking about it. Well, is he insulting me or some person? you said, you rascal, these are foolish ideas. He said, these are ridiculous ideas you are offering. He said, you are nonsense. Who are you? You might even stop walking and really look at you. And then you thought, well, wait a minute, I better be careful. And which was really significant also, because at some point earlier, obviously we had become disciples, we had gone through the process of accepting it, now he was our guru, so it was one thing to play with him, but are we actually going to give up this faith that we had gathered? And so we too were faithful, not just jnanis who had accepted it by some process of argumentation, and we didn't want to give up Prabhupada's goodwill toward us and the protection of himself and Krishna for having accepted the life of Krishna consciousness and faith in the eternal soul and the process of receiving it. So in a sense we would back off from the argument, but it might continue to go on within the mind. Let's look at the arguments. The way, in other words, rather than just teaching a child, the soul is eternal, there are philosophical arguments why you should accept it. And the basic argument is that it's taught in the books of knowledge, and that's the way of learning, as Prabhupada would explain. Everything has to be learned from books of knowledge, not by mental speculation. Especially such a profound thing as what is the life within the body and what is the supreme... I'm speaking only about the eternality of the individual soul today, but of course then you have to go beyond that to the supreme soul, and so many topics that can only be understood from books of knowledge. So then why should we accept books of knowledge over other things? That's analyzed by... teachers like Srila Jiva Goswami and others. So they say, there are three kinds of evidence, pratyaksha, anumana, and shabda. Pratyaksha means direct. Direct evidence is not very good because our senses are not perfect. So what you see, what your senses, so defective. Seeing a little ball in the sky, you think it's the sun. But... by knowledge of books, you understand it's a huge planet and so on. Then aside from your senses, inductive knowledge, it may be like this, hypothesis. For instance, Darwin's theory says it may be like this, it may be like that. That's a perfect example, Darwin, because he, long ago, he took a voyage and collected different data and of rocks and fossils and impressions and so on, and then brought them back to the laboratory and then made theories about them. And from those, from the little bit, especially in those days, he probably couldn't collect very much. I remember I read his book, it was called The Voyage of the Beagle, name of his boat. He probably didn't collect very much. He didn't have very scientific tools to study them, but he did a lot of mental speculating and decided that there was no God, and that there was an origin of the species by random selection and so on. Very interesting theories from the mind. It may be like this, it may be like that. So that's a kind of knowledge. But it's not science. It's a suggestion, it's not perfect. And then the third kind of knowledge, from authoritative sources, that is perfect. So that means that you just receive it and you don't add your speculation to it. The example it gives here is a radio station tells you what's going to be on the dial. But it's not just a radio station, it's Shabda Brahma coming from perfect authorities of Shruti, the Vedas. Prabhupada says, I'm reading from the introduction to Isopanishad, we have published Bhagavad Gita as it is because we accept Krishna as he is speaking. Whatever Krishna says, we accept. That's Krishna consciousness. It saves time. And then he uses two important terms, inductive and deductive knowledge, which is another way of going over this ground. Inductive knowledge and deductive. From deductive, you accept that man is mortal. Your father says man is mortal. Your sister says man is mortal. Everyone says man is mortal. You do not experiment. You accept it as fact that man is mortal. If you want to research to find out whether man is mortal, you have to study each and every man. And you may come to think there may be some man who is not dying, but you have not seen him yet. That's inductive knowledge. Sanskrit is vidroha, is the descending process. Aroha is the ascending process. You've heard all this before. But still, you can learn this in so many bhakti shastra courses and so on. It's a formidable science. The academic scholars would say that the Vaishnava philosophy has a very good internal logic of its own, a good theology, but it's all internal. It's still based on a faith. And we would say, yes, but everything is based on a faith process. We take this faith process, not another. And so the debate may continue about the eternality of the soul. I wrote an essay about this in this little book, Living with the Scriptures, and I called the essay Do or Die, because either you accept this, Bhagavad Gita's teachings on Krishna's authority, or you can't go further. Do or die in the spiritual. And you're free to accept it or not, but if you don't, then you can't go further. There's good reason to accept it, but still you have to accept it. And in the essay, the moment in the essay that I like the best is a human moment, is that it starts out telling how Prabhupada argued with a guy who came to the temple who said that actually the self changes, not just the body, and how Prabhupada couldn't convince him, and after the lecture we couldn't convince him. But then there are those who do become convinced, and they're the devotees. And so, which is interesting, that some are convinced and some aren't. That subject is brought up in the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's 229. Some look on the soul as amazing, and some have to hear about him, still can't understand. And Prabhupada says that it's due to pious activities in past lives, or that one will understand, and it's almost like you're cursed from supernatural forces that you won't understand. But there are two divisions of people. So in this essay, I compare that challenger, who even Prabhupada couldn't convince, to a question and answer that I had with a devotee, and he was at, he said, "How do you accept that there is transmigration of the soul in the next life?" Advaita Das asked me. This was no formal inquiry in a lecture hall, nor was it a challenge so much, but a confidential personal encounter with an honest brother. We were walking through the streets of the Lower East Side on our way to an afternoon of chanting in Tompkins Square Park. Advaita was a new devotee. He wanted to know why I believed and how he could believe in the soul. I replied in the same natural way that he had inquired, by giving an example which Srila Prabhupada had given. Just like the mother is the one to tell you who your father is, you can't speculate on your own. I said that you might remember an incident where you accepted how the soul is eternal. There's also a moment when for the first time we preach. That's an interesting moment when somebody asks us like this. And then we hear ourselves almost repeating the philosophy with a little bit of conviction. Maybe we also hear how it's a little hollow, that there's lack of conviction, but there we are. Somebody's hearing from us and we're speaking the philosophy. He had heard it before, but he knew it was meaningful. "You mean because Swamiji and the Gita are saying so?" "Yes. Otherwise, how can anybody know?" And that was that. We went to the park and chanted all afternoon. From time to time, it may be a little embarrassing, maybe to our Western mindset, that we use this process, since it's so much not used. But we shouldn't be, and we should put it forward whenever necessary, and to ourselves. That this is why we have knowledge of the soul as eternal, and the transmigration of the soul. So this beginning instruction is the foundation. It was taught by Prabhupada throughout his lecturing, great emphasis, and of course he would bring it up to bhakti. But if people don't even accept that the soul is eternal, then they can't go further. I like to tell an incident of Prabhupada telling me about the transmigration, because it's on this topic, but also it was very late in his life, and it was maybe the last quality attention that he gave me individually that I can remember, or one of them. It was at the Mayapur Festival, 1977. And the reason he gave me this attention, I think, is because of a couple of reasons. One, I had just been with him for a month. Every month, a different GBC man stayed with Prabhupada, was his secretary, and then they would change so that he got training. So I had just been there while he was in Bhubaneswar and for 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks while he was in Calcutta and Mayapur. Then Tamal Krishna Maharaj had taken over, and he would stay in that position until the end of Prabhupada's life, which was the end of 1977. And another reason Prabhupada called me in was that at the GBC meetings in 1977, I was reinstated to be the editor-in-chief of Back to Godhead, and there was a dissatisfaction among the leaders and society that the magazine was getting watered down and that it should preach more strongly and philosophically. So Prabhupada, hearing this complaint, he accepted this and he wanted the magazine to do like that. But anyway, so there we were all in Mayapur with Prabhupada, and there were hundreds of devotees, and it was very early in the morning after Mangalarti. We were chanting japa, and Prabhupada was in his room. Hari Sori was his servant, but he used to have guards and devotees who ran errands who would sort of hang around just outside Prabhupada's room. Those of you who know Mayapur, That used to be the main building. Now it's just dwarfed by other buildings. And in the second or third floor, I don't remember which, off the main stairway, you turn left and there's his little room with a low desk. So outside that room, the guards would be. So one of them was sent to get me, and where I was. He said, Prabhupada wants to see you. So I went there, and in his room, he was sitting, and he just had one little light on. And he said, I've just been dictating in the Bhagavat this morning, and I wanted you to hear what it is. He said, why don't people accept this transmigration of the soul? He said, it is, he was talking about their failure to do so, and that it is so convincing. So I just agreed with him that they were very dull, and that's why they didn't. So he said, it is so perfect, and so it puts everything into place and gives us a direction how to live our life. You remember Prabhupada also saying that because people in India, still today, although it's decaying, they so much accept this that it kind of governs their behavior from becoming really savagely degraded, because they have an idea that the present situation is determined by the past life and the next life is going to be determined by the present life because of the transmigration of the soul. But without that, then all hell breaks loose. Only one life, and the soul is not eternal. So there's nothing but sense gratification, or in the absence of it, vicious acts to get it. So, and then those who try for respect, it's not based on real knowledge, but something partial of the heart, which is perhaps not enough. Anyway, Prabhupada was talking about that, and then he played the tape for me, and it was like the poor production, the poor reproduction. Not like a lecture, but of a dictation tape. And what he was dictating at that time, it was the 10th canto, it was a speech. Of course, throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many speeches about transmigration and the souls being eternal by Narada and others when it's necessary. Well, this was a speech by Vasudeva to Kamsa when Kamsa wanted to kill Devaki. It's about transmigration. So he played it, and it had different analogies there about the caterpillar changing from one branch to another when he's ready to go from one branch to another, and different things like that. Very good section.